This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Pet lovers, welcome to Best Bets for Pets. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. And wow, this is a show you are not going to want to miss. I don't even know how to tell you how amazed I was at reading this book. I have the author with us today, and this is a book about pets that is unbelievably fascinating and just incredible. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Michelle Fern here, and you know saving cats is near and dear to my heart. Did you know that there is an estimated 70 to 100 million free-roaming cats in the United States? And without spay-neuter, that number will keep growing. Not only does spay-neuter mainly reduce the community cat population, but it also keeps cats healthier. Scooter, the neutered cat, is on a mission to give cats an extra life by making it hip to be snipped. Visit his website, givethem10.org, to help pioneer a better world for cats. That's givethem10, spelled out, T-E-N.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome author and veterinarian Dr. Amy Addis, who just recently wrote the book Pets and the City. Welcome, Dr. Amy.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm delighted to be here.
I am so glad to have you on. I read a lot, and I read a lot of pet books, and I was riveted. The full title, it's Pets in the City, True Tales of Manhattan House Call Veterinarian. And you're also the founder of City Pets. So can you give us a little background about yourself?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a dog and cat veterinarian. I practice in Manhattan. And about three decades ago, I started a veterinary house call practice. And that was really a novelty at that time. Most people said you should get a real job. This is never going to work. But I had the presence to think of a way that animals would be more comfortable and a way that I could deliver veterinary care at home. And so I've been doing that for dogs and cats in New York for the past 30 some odd years and absolutely loving it.
And you have had a lot of great stories, and we'll get into some of that. But what made you decide to write Pets in the City?
So I've been writing this book in my head ever since I can remember. And it really started with me coming home every day and saying to my husband, you will not believe what happened today. And you know how you always think, I'll remember this forever. And then the next day I was like, what was that really interesting story I wanted to remember? So I realized I needed to write these things down. And I don't write the whole story. Sometimes just a sentence is all I need to capture the essence of what happened. And then eventually it all comes back to me. So after decades of doing this, I realized I had so many amazing stories and I didn't want to write a book of, oh, I was a little girl, I wanted to be a vet. And then I went to vet school and then I got my first job and then I got my second job, et cetera. I realized that things that happened in my experiences often went together into certain themes. And I thought that was a much more interesting way of telling the story. Because even though I'm the only character that goes from the beginning to the end, it's not a book about me. It's a book about the animals, who I will refer to as my patients. It's a book about the people, who I refer to as my clients. And because I'm going around Manhattan all day long in the backseat of a car, meeting doormen, dealing with traffic, crazy things that happen going in and out of buildings, the book is about Manhattan. So it's really about those three things that turn it into a really interesting tale of the experiences I've had in my decades of being a New York City house call practitioner.
What an eloquent way to describe it. And you have a quite witty sense of humor, which, you know, if you're house call vet in Manhattan, I think that's a necessity.
You know, I joke about the fact that oftentimes I'm invisible to my clients. And again, clients are the humans. I'm never invisible to my patients. They're, you know, just like any other vet, my patients are a little afraid of me. But as I explain to people, especially the cats, they're going to dislike me a lot less than they dislike the vet in the animal hospital, because all the things you have to do to go to the animal hospital don't occur when someone's making a house call to you. Cats don't have to go in cat carriers. They don't have to go in the back seat of the car. They don't have to sit in the waiting room with a barking dog. So they're much, much calmer at home. But I'm still going to poke and prod them and stick them with needles. So ultimately, I'm not their favorite person. But again, in the scheme of things, I'm not as bad as I could be in a hospital.
That kind of leads into what I was going to ask you. How is the house call veterinarian different than a standard veterinarian? I get it for cats, and that's a godsend for cats because cats and carriers, sometimes I've had to cancel appointments because I couldn't get my cat in the carrier. And I have all the tricks, but still, it's mission impossible at times.
Even I've been stumped finding a cat when I know they're in the apartment and we just look everywhere. Eventually, we find them, but it does take a lot of time.
Yes. So you even have a couple of stories in here just in dealing with your drivers, getting the right driver in Manhattan. But give us a little bit of a taste of what it's like. You know, us as pet parents, we know what it's like going to the veterinarian with our pet. Not fun. I live in a very warm place. I hate taking hated taking him to the vet when it was warm out. It was just uncomfortable. And, you know, it's never a pleasant experience going to the vet, except if it's just annual shots, then it's not so bad. But house call brings a whole other realm to it. So what are some of the differences we wouldn't expect?
So I like to explain to people that I can do on house call pretty much anything that a veterinarian can do in the exam room. I can do the physical exam, I can take blood, I can take urine, I can vaccinate, I can do an EKG, I can do an ultrasound, I can do any of those things in a client's home. What I can't do is take an x-ray or do anything that requires anesthesia or surgery. So those things are done in the regular animal hospital. There's no compromise to the quality of care because we're coming to your home. What we do bring is the convenience. Oftentimes for my established clients, they're not even home for my visit. If they have a very important day at work and their dog or cat doesn't feel well, their doorman can let us in because, of course, this is Manhattan. Everybody lives, for the most part, in an apartment building. So they either give us a set of keys, their doorman can let us in, maybe their nanny is there with their children or their housekeeper, or don't tell anyone. Sometimes they leave the door unlocked. So it just is an enormous convenience for people. So, you know, we can come in, and I say we because we're a team. On every house call, there's a driver who brings us around Manhattan because it would be impossible to do this if I had to drive my own car and park it or take a taxi or an Uber because we carry too much equipment. And then I go with a nurse. So there's somebody helping me with each call. That maximizes the efficiency and we can get things done pretty much within approximately a half an hour would be the normal time frame for a house call visit. So if the client, the human, can't be home, we'll have a conversation beforehand on the telephone. We'll be in touch with each other via texting, email, phone calls, whatever they want, so they can give me the full history and I can ask whatever follow-up questions I need to. And then I complete the entire physical exam and taking the laboratory samples, et cetera. Every once in a while, this is not a perfect system. I think you'll recall the story in the book where my client thought that her cat had a respiratory infection, a cold, because her sister's cat had a cold and she thought it had similar symptoms. But what she was interpreting as a little bit of a stuffy nose was actually her cat having difficulty breathing, and her cat did not have a respiratory infection. It actually had a heart condition and had fluid building up in its lungs. So I went to make that house call without the client being home and found the cat really compromised in the bathroom behind the toilet, having incredible difficulty breathing. And I was unable to reach the client and I had no choice but to do what I did. We went through her closets until we found her cat carrier and I took the cat with me back to the hospital. Ironically, it was a day like you described, you hate taking your pets out on a really, really hot and humid day. And this was a very, very hot and humid day in New York City. We were stuck in traffic. The air conditioning just wasn't enough to keep this cat comfortable. And I wound up running the last few blocks to the hospital to get the cat into air conditioning and in fact, into oxygen as quickly as possible. So sometimes what people think is not a big deal turns out to be a big deal. But most of the time, what people think is a big deal turns out not to be.
Very interesting. As you said in your book, you do also go have themes with throughout, and we'll touch on a couple after the break. But what I found was, and of course, it was an entertaining, so entertaining. We talked about this a little before we started, but I really think that this is a must read. It doesn't matter if you have a pet at all, if you like to read, if you can read, you should get this book because it's a fascinating book. Dr. Amy, this is incredible. I hope Netflix is listening because this would be a great show, great series, different from everything else that they keep redoing. Anyway, what are some of the few surprising things that you found out when you became a house call veterinarian, besides the, the glimpse into some of these amazing homes?
Well, I think you talked about the essence of the book. Even though the way I'm in this world is through the pets, this is a book about people. I have been witness to people's lives, to their families. I have been doing this for so long that I came into the household perhaps when children were very young and then watched them grow up. And then they went off on their own. They married, they had their own children, and I continue my relationship with them through their pets. And you really get to know people so much more when you're in their home rather than being in an animal hospital with them, where it's a completely different relationship. So it's very, very personal. Having said that, sometimes it's a little too personal. And sometimes, you know, I joke and say that I don't just show up in people's homes. They make an appointment and they know that I'm coming. So I'm surprised sometimes at what is left out in the home that probably I shouldn't be seeing. And I do tell a few of those stories in the book. But it's, again, for those who maybe thought they might not find anything of interest about a book written by a veterinarian, this is a book about people. It's a book about pets. And it's also about my beloved New York City, because I have to go around the city every single day. You know, when the UN General Assembly is in session and we can't get through the streets and we're racing to get to an emergency, it becomes a challenge that is different from what other veterinarians go through.
Well, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back and talk more about your book. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Dr. Amy Addis, and she's a veterinarian. She is the founder of City Pets, and she wrote the book Pets in the City. And Dr. Amy, I learned things I had no idea about in your book, and we're just going to touch on a couple of stories, if that's okay, and not even go all into detail, because people need to read this book. It's wildly entertaining, and there's themes throughout that really make you think as a pet parent, oh, you know what? I should be better. I should be doing that, or I should give thought to this. One of the things I found that blew my mind is the story of the gentleman that didn't want to neuter his dog.
So it's a true story.
With the fake balls?
Yes.
I didn't know they had such a thing.
I don't think this is the finest moment of veterinary medicine that there is such a thing as a prosthetic testicles. It's not something that I recommend. But in this particular instance, with a male dog whose family just didn't want him to be neutered. And I shouldn't actually say his family, but his macho dad didn't want him to be neutered. But the important point here is that their previous dog died of prostate cancer. And we can pretty much eliminate prostate cancer in veterinary medicine by neutering male dogs. And they also have an enormous number of medical issues as they get older. And by the way, this is no different from older men. They get prostate issues. But in dogs, we have this convenient way to eliminate the problem. And the wife really did want to have the dog neutered. The husband didn't. And I believe that the reason the husband didn't want him neutered is he didn't like the way he would look aesthetically. And this was an instance where the wife gave documentation that she was the rightful owner of the dog. She signed the papers from the breeder. And she asked us to have the dog neutered and implant these prosthetic testicles. And I don't know to this day if the husband ever knew whether those testicles were real or not, but he seemed happy. She was happy. And as the veterinarian, I was very happy that this dog would not develop prostate disease later on in life. So that was just a one-off, but it was an example of sometimes people are more interested in, you know, what they perceive their dog to be rather than the true health and well-being of the dog. And this was just a way of working around that.
You said it a lot better than I did, prosthetic testicles. I just put in my notes, fake balls, but it was a great way to solve the problem. You also have had a lot of celebrity clients and some of the stories about, is it okay if I say the name?
Of course. Every celebrity in the book is in the book with their permission.
Okay. Well, of course, it's a printed book, but Joan Rivers, funny. And Billy Joel, oh, I'm a huge fan. But how did you get past the wow moments? And then his wife at the time, Katie Lee. And I know there were other celebrities as well, even royalty. But how did you get past the, oh my gosh, I'm taking care of Billy Joel's dog or, you know, Joan Rivers' Yorkie?
So there's always a wow factor because these people are just so fabulous at what they do. So it's okay to just, you know, really appreciate them as being great in what they do. However, it all boils down to the pet that I'm caring for. So you get over that wow factor pretty quickly. Now, I'm not going to, you know, lie and say I don't get excited when my phone rings and it's one of these great celebrities. I'm just so honored that they trust me to care for their pets. Joan Rivers was one of my first clients. I met her when I was a young veterinarian. And when I started my practice, she was my biggest booster. And I continued to care for her pets for the rest of her life. And I continue to care for her pets because she left instructions that that was to be the case if she predeceased them. So I still care for her two dogs.
Incredible. She had some very funny comments, but you guys have to get the book.
Exactly. We can't tell everything.
Can't tell all of them. And you also had some great stories, and we're going to generalize here, about the uber wealthy. And some of the things I read, I thought, okay, so that's why they're so wealthy. They don't want to spend the money, especially the one with the restaurant. You guys will get the book and read that story. But how do you find the uber wealthy so different when it comes to their pets? Are they a lot different than the rest of us?
I think pets are the great equalizers. I think, you know, the billionaire clients that I have and the people who live in housing projects, ultimately, they're all the same. If they call me, they love their pets and they should all be treated with the same amount of respect in that regard. So, you know, I don't want people to think that my practice is made up of rich people. Because I do house calls, people think this is like a concierge service. And it really is not. You know, we try to price ourselves in a manner that is not too expensive for average people. And once we explain to them that, you know, especially if they have multiple pets, everything sort of averages out and it's more efficient with their time and more efficient with their pocketbooks if they have all their pets seen at one time. So having said that, yes, I see billionaires. I see normal people. I see people who are celebrities and I see people who are just barely getting by. Ultimately, once you get over the introduction and who they are, it's about the animals. Some of the extremes, the homes of the billionaires can be so over the top. And on the other end, some of the places I go to, you really don't want to go back there again. I have seen every extreme. And ultimately, that's what people are about, right? We're all unique. And I have been witness to that through caring for their pets. I do see the greatest art collections you can imagine. You know, this is like going through a private museum, because some of my clients are such notable collectors. And when you're looking for that cat who wants to hide, and you get to go through the living room and the salon and the library, et cetera, I do get to see some amazing art. And I've also had to go underneath beds that haven't been vacuumed in a decade. So I see it all.
But you're right, the great equalizer is the pet. And the pet doesn't know that, oh, their human is wealthy or not wealthy. They just know that they're loved.
So in the first chapter, I talk about Gail and her cat, Sweetie. And Gail was a hoarder. And this apartment was very, very difficult to be in. In fact, I chose sometimes to conduct my physical exam of Sweetie in the hallway, just because I didn't want to go back into the apartment. And when I would see the two of them together, Sweetie loved her mom so much. And the two of them got so much pleasure from each other. And it's like, you know what? I continued to go there. And oftentimes my visits, of course, they were because Sweetie needed help. But Gail needed some help too. And whether that was as a friend or someone who she just knew was looking out for her well-being, I think that gave her a great deal of comfort.
I think you're right. And you did follow her story through, you know, other parts of the book. And it was kind of incredible reading about that and that relationship. You also do a great job of matchmaking with, you know, dogs that you know that are abandoned or there's some situation. Because can you, you know, I think you're on a speed dial for some of the shelters to where you've done this amazing matchmaking. Is that a skill that you just developed over the years? You know, you so found know of this dog and this person and they would just go great together.
I think it was a necessary skill for me. Again, I'm in my clients' homes. So, you know, for example, there's a story in the book about Mrs. Blum. She's a very elderly woman with a very old dog who passed away. And because I had known her for years and I had been in her home, I felt that I needed to go visit her after her dog passed away rather than just call her on the phone. And when I went to see her, I was just shocked at the deterioration in her condition in the few days after her dog had passed. She was still wearing a nightgown. I had never seen her in a nightgown before this. She was always dressed with her hair brushed, makeup on. It was like a social visit when I went over. She looked gaunt. When I asked her when she ate last, she wasn't sure. And I realized at that moment that truly what was keeping her alive was her dog, being responsible for feeding and walking and caring for her dog. And now that the dog was gone, this woman was in her 90s, her husband was gone, her friends were gone. I felt that she didn't have anything left to live for. And this was an emergency call to every single shelter group I knew. You need to help me find an older, small poodle with a good personality. And they came through in a few days. And I went back to her house without saying a word and had the dog with me. And she looked at me like, why is that dog here? I don't want a dog. And I said, it's not about you, Mrs. Blum. It's about the dog. I have no place to put this dog. It's going to go into a shelter. It might be put to sleep. Can you just take care of the dog for a day or two until I can find a home? I don't want to admit this to everybody listening, but that was a complete fabrication. I mean, I begged to get this dog. And of course, when I went back the next day, she said, you were so right to bring him to me. He really needed help. And of course, he had helped her so much in just the few hours he'd been there. And I don't know if I would have known so much about her need if my only experience with her was in an examination room of an animal hospital. This was because it was personal. And that's what I love about how I practice veterinary medicine. You know, I love the animals, but I love the people too. And I feel like I can provide a service for them as well.
I remember that story and that happened. There are a few stories like that in your book. And thinking of, you're helping the pet, of course, from being most cases probably shelter and euthanized. But how much are you helping these people with their lives and possibly even extending their lives, definitely bringing more joy to their lives?
So in this example that I gave you, I know 100% this was for the women's benefit. I mean, this little toy poodle that I got her, he was on everybody's top list. Everybody wanted him. But I was like, no, no, no. This is a life-saving adoption. If we can make this happen, this woman is going to go back to caring about whether she lives or dies. So this was all about her. And she provided him an amazing life. She predeceased him. And then he wound up at a forever home after that. But he was with her for 2.5 years. And I don't think she would have lived 2.5 more years if she didn't have him in her life.
No, I think you're right. You talk about something at the end of the book. It's one of my peeves. You talk about Dex and the puppy mills. You could probably mention it a lot more eloquently than I can, but there's so much that goes wrong with pets and pet stores.
So let's just explain to everyone. I even hate the term puppy mill because it sounds so cute. I mean, this is factory farming of dogs where the dogs are kept in horrific conditions. The females are just used to breed and breed and breed. And then when they're of no use any longer, their lives are ended. So, you know, there's no care in the genetics of the offspring. It's really all about making money. And I like people to realize that if you're going to, you know, a pet store, most likely these animals came from factory farming. And the problem is you can't ever go in a pet store because once you do and you catch the eye of an individual animal, you're immediately in love and you feel like you have to rescue that animal. And that's what people say to me all the time. I adopted my dog. Oh, really? Where'd you get it from? I got it from the pet store. I rescued my dog. Where'd you get it from? From the pet store. It is rescuing that individual animal, but what it's doing is continuing this whole process. Every time they get money, there's a reason for them to continue factory farming of animals. So in the case that you're talking about, this little dog, it was a miniature dachshund. He came to me from another hospital where he was brought to be euthanized because the pet store owner didn't want to spend money on a veterinary visit when the puppy was sick. And he thought he knew what he was doing. So he decided to give the same injection that he'd always seen the veterinarian give. And he did that to the dog. And of course, it was the wrong injection. And it caused all of the dog's skin to become diseased and ultimately become necrotic. And actually, the skin died. And so I got the dog and said I would do my best to see if I could, you know, carry him through this period of time with antibiotics and pain medicine and supportive care and ultimately skin grafts. And this dog made a 100% recovery. The injection that they gave him that was incorrect was an injection of a concentrated sugar solution called 50% dextrose. So I named him Dex because all of my rescues get named for the circumstance that brought them to me. So this was little Dex. Dex ultimately went to a fantastic forever home. And he was also very good news for me because I had happened to photograph him every single day that he was under my care because it was the most amazing case I had ever seen. And ultimately, I wrote him up and won a grand competition that sent me to Hawaii to present the case. So Dex got a good life and I got a great trip to Hawaii.
I'm so happy for you and a great story. And you also mentioned too that a lot of these factory farmed dogs, because of the problems that they have, end up, people don't want to care for all of the issues they have. So they end up at shelters. Is there a stat that you're aware of? Is that why?
So I just want to be careful what we emphasize here, because ultimately, I do want people to go to shelters.
Yes.
And sometimes it's an expectation of someone who spends a few thousand dollars on a dog and then realizes, oh, it's got this problem. And oh my God, I have to train it too. It's more than I can handle. And they wind up in shelters. Every single pet I've ever had in my life has been a rescue. Two of my dogs actually came from, most likely from pet stores. I don't want you to think there's an epidemic of blindness in pug dogs. I just happen to love pugs. And two of my pugs were blind. One was literally from the pet store that was about to euthanize him because they realized they couldn't actually sell a blind dog. And I took him. And his predecessor was a dog I found on my way into veterinary school one day. I walked over because he was a cute little pug tied to a tree. And I saw a note that said, I am blind. Please take good care of me. Now, of course, it was a little harder to care for a blind dog than it would be for a sighted dog. but I wouldn't have traded that for anything. They were both amazing dogs, just slightly more difficult to train, and I had to spend a little more attention just making sure they didn't get themselves into trouble. But completely amazing dogs. And most people who met them, and they didn't overlap in time, they were years apart, but I had the same occurrence with both. People who met them didn't realize that they were blind. That's how normal they were. So just a shout out to everyone. Even if you are in love with a particular breed of dog, if you put a little time and effort into it, you can rescue, you can save a life in the breed that you like best.
Yes. And where I was wrong before is that not all purebreds in, I kind of led toward this. So to clarify, not all purebreds that are in shelters are definitely from factory farming. Sometimes you're right, they're there because the family can't take care of them or who knows what. But we shouldn't overlook those special dogs and cats that maybe aren't perfect, but they need their forever homes too.
So there's a chapter in the book that I call There's No Such Thing as a Disabled Pet, because they don't know they're disabled. They are such an inspiration to all of us that they deal with what they have to deal with. And they're just truly amazing. My own two dogs, my first one, okay, sort of a warped sense of humor, but I named him Bumper because until I trained him, he bumped into everything. My second blind dog, I named Leonardo after Leonardo da Vinci because he was truly a genius. He would go hiking with us off leash and knew up, down, over, under, left, right, careful, and would stop on a dime with given the right command. Truly amazing dogs.
Incredible. As I mentioned, I know a couple times, Dr. Amy, but this is really an incredible book. I hope you write part two, or I don't know, changed up the title, Pets in the City. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to the second book.
Thank you.
For this book, what are some key points that you hope people get once they've finished reading your book?
So I tried to do a mix of stories, that there are some funny stories, there are some poignant or sad stories, but I also tried to put a little bit of information, knowledge, at-home dangers, things that I've noticed throughout the years that I could share with people that maybe could make them better pet owners. So things like, it's a beautiful day here today, and in, you know, you're inclined the first nice days of spring and summer to open your windows without realizing how dangerous that could be for pets inside. And when I go into people's homes and I see windows open or doors to terraces open, I immediately close them and talk about dangers. The same is true for drapery cords that are hanging down that are strangle hazards, or certain flowers like lilies are so toxic to cats. The petal, the leaf, the stamen, the water that the flower sits in are all poisonous. And I don't mean poisonous like you might get a little upset stomach. I mean poisonous like you get kidney failure and you die. So I tried to put some educational things in, but this is not a how to care for your pet book. I tell the story of a woman who was a physician who had seen me use people medicine over and over again on her pets, including her dog who had cancer. And I used the same chemotherapy that's used in human oncology. And so she decided to give her dog a bunch of Tylenols because it was limping rather than call for a vet visit. And Tylenol is so toxic to dogs and deadly to cats. So I felt that in telling this story, I could also share with people that pick up the phone and call your vet if your pet has a medical problem. Don't take it upon yourself. Don't assume that dogs are like little people or cats are like little dogs. They're all different. And what's safe for one isn't necessarily safe for the others.
Well, again, I applaud you. This is just an incredible book. After talking to you today, I think it's everything you wanted to be. It's educational, and through storytelling, it's informative, it's interesting, and I think it will help people and possibly get more pets adopted.
I hope so.
That's always good. Okay, at this point, is there anything you wanted to add?
So the only thing I would add is that this whole journey that I've had has not been a straight line. It was kind of a circuitous one. But the thing is, from day one, I knew I wanted to become a veterinarian. And I just realized that my unique talent of wanting it to be a personal way to do it presented some challenges, and I figured out how to do that. So for anybody out there listening who is passionate about animals, who might be interested in pursuing a career in veterinary medicine, do it with 100% of your energy and make it happen, because it is by far the world's greatest career.
Thank you so much. So where can people find Pets in the City?
So please go to your local bookstore and buy it there. If they don't have it, ask them to order it. If for any reason you have to have it immediately, it's available at Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble. It's also out as an audiobook and on Kindle.
Dr. Amy, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I want to thank you for writing your book, because it was just a fabulous read. And I think it's going to change some lives. I hope there's a series out there that's going to change yours by TV series. That would be such a great idea.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our talk.
Okay, everyone. Again, the book is Pets in the City, True Tales of a Manhattan House Called Veterinarian by Dr. Amy Addis. This is an incredible book. You need to get it. I loved it. It's a fantastic book. I want to thank my cat crew who let me read. Thank you, Molly, Charlotte, and Dennis. Thanks, of course, to Dr. Amy Addis for coming on Best Bets for Pets and writing this amazing book, Pets in the City, and for creating City Pets in Manhattan. And of course, thank you to everyone listening to Best Bets for Pets. I so appreciate it. And of course, the show would not be the same without the magic of Mark Winter, my producer. So remember, you never know what we're going to have next on Best Bets for Pets.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.